This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. The flu vaccine, Vioxx, antidepressants, and now a new super pill that promises to help people lose weight and stop smoking. The safety, availability, and the approval of prescription drugs are in the news a lot lately, but lately a lot of the coverage has not been all that favorable. Instead, politicians and the public wonder whether the Food and Drug Administration is doing its job. Why are people dying after taking medicines that the FDA approved? Congress is investigating. The National Academy of Sciences will review the FDA's drug safety systems. And the Justice Department has announced it will investigate drug manufacturer Merck and companies' handling of Vioxx. Is the drug evaluation and regulation system broken, overloaded, or working as best it can given market pressures and demands? Later in the program, we'll continue our series on the seven deadly sins. Today, the issue is anger. But first, do you still have confidence in the FDA and the drugs it approves? Is the agency too close to the drug industry? Our number is 800-989-8255. That's 800-989-TALK. And the email address is TOTN@NPR.org. And to begin, we turn to Joanne Silberner, NPR's science correspondent with us here in Studio 3A. Thanks, as always, Joanne.
Thank you, Neil.
And let's turn to Vioxx first. Is Congress investigating the FDA because they, in retrospect, approved the drug too quickly without enough tests, or in retrospect that they were too slow off the mark to help it get off the market?
Well, I think the suspicion is more that they were too slow as data, more and more data came in. I mean, you could test a drug forever before putting it on the market. Something is always going to come up after you put something on the market. You've tested it in 3,000 people, 10,000 people. At some point when you hit 20, 50, 100,000 people, you're going to find something. The question is, what do you do when you find it? And I think that's the government's concern right now. Did the FDA do enough? They actually didn't even pull the drug off the market. It was the company itself that made the decision with a recent study, even though there were some older studies that also raised doubts.
Mm-hmm. And is this point to systemic problems, or is this a one of a kind?
Well, it's hard to tell. You know, the issue came up also with antidepressants in kids, with SSRIs. And there the data are a little fuzzier as to the relative safety versus benefits. You're always weighing risks and benefits. You know, any drug is going to have side effects. The questions are, do doctors and patients know what those side effects are? Can they are they properly evaluated so they can make that decision clearly?
And are these side effects, and it varies in case to case, drug to drug, but are these side effects being exhibited in cases where the drug is being prescribed for the conditions it was tested for, or are they rising in cases where the doctors are prescribing it as for something else off-label, as it's called?
Well, that's come up with Vioxx, because that drug is supposed to be for people who are suspected of maybe having trouble with other pain-killing drugs that are equally effective at killing pain but can also cause side effects, stomach problems, and the like. Vioxx was used a lot as a first-line drug, though, instead of a second-line drug. Some people say because of advertising, which also comes under the FDA's jurisdiction.
Mm-hmm. And obviously we're seeing, all of us are seeing, a lot more drug advertising on television and magazines and everywhere else.
Right.
Yeah. Now, what steps is the FDA taking, other than its licks in front of Congress, I guess, but other than that, what steps is it going to take to try to regain the public trust?
Well, it's taken some of the grilling it's gotten pretty seriously, and I was at a number of those hearings, and it was quite intense. And their reaction last week, they announced that they're going to have the Institute of Medicine, which is part of the National Academy of Sciences, step in and look over its processes, mostly on post-marketing surveillance, on what the agency does after a drug gets on the market. They're going to look at that. They're going to look at other things. Another issue that's come up both with Vioxx and with SSRIs was internal agency disputes. There were people within the FDA in both cases who raised red flags and either weren't listened to or felt somewhat intimidated. The FDA has announced that they're going to come up with very formal procedures so that its own employees will feel more comfortable about raising doubts. They're going to name, there's been an office that's been no one's held the office for a while, which is the Office of Drug Safety. They've promised that they're going to name a head of the Office of Drug Safety. So they're making some moves now. I think that they see that there is intense scrutiny of the agency and that they've got to make some changes.
Another area of criticism, at least in the past, has been that the FDA is often very slow to approve new drugs. This was particularly true in the case of AIDS drugs.
Right, and that has changed a lot. There was a law passed that said that manufacturers could pay user fees to the FDA to get quicker drug approval. It enabled the agency to hire more people. And I'm not, you know, I think our second guest is going to have more to say on this, mm-hmm. but from what I see, the length of time it's taken to get drugs approved has dropped tremendously.
Right. Let's get some listeners involved in the conversation. If you'd like to join us, the number is 800-989-8255. That's 800-989-TALK, or you can send us an email, TOTN at NPR.org. And let's begin with Fred, and Fred's calling from Miami.
Yes, hello.
Hi.
I first wanted to say I'd used Vioxx years ago for my back and got remarkable results until I ultimately had surgery. But I thought it was a wonderful drug, and I'm not sure I understand what's wrong with it today. But my comment is this. I'm about to move to Canada, and I'm wondering what sort of approval process I have. One arguments that I heard
Fred,
Bush.
Fred, I'm afraid your phone line is breaking up, but are you asking what sort of drug safety, drug importation safety procedures the Canadians have?
Well, I'm asking what's the call it the what sort of FDA do the Canadians have when they approve drugs?
And this has to do with the reimportation issue into the United States, or you're just
exactly.
moving to Canada?
One of the things that right, I think President Bush said.
Yeah,
one of the things that President Bush said was that, you know, we're not sure if these drugs are safe. And everyone else said, well, aren't they the same drugs that are being made in the U.S.? So my question is, do they have a drug approval process?
We got it, Fred. Thanks very much. Joanne, what can you tell us about that?
Yeah, they're pretty responsible about that. I don't think there have been any reports about serious problems with the Canadian agency's work. What their drugs may be labeled differently. They don't have all the drugs there that we have here. You know, there are some minor differences, but I really have not heard big major safety questions about Canadian drugs. The FDA has complained that some of the Canadian internet pharmacies, which are unable now to obtain drugs from some of the big international manufacturers, which have cut them off, have been obtaining drugs from other countries, from England and countries like that, who have some pretty serious safety regulations in place, as well as other countries. The Canadian internet pharmacies, though, say that, you know, that they've checked these drugs out and that's okay. I think that's an issue that we're going to hear a lot more about.
But those drugs that are directly imported by those internet companies and then sent on to the United States, those are not inspected by the Canadians' FDA?
When they're bought within Canada or from Canadian wholesalers, they are. But some of them...
If they're just shipped through, they're not.
They may be shipped through, right.
Yes, okay. Fred, thanks for the phone call.
You're welcome.
And let's get one more caller in. This is Emron. Emron's calling from Boston.
Hello?
Hi, you're on the air.
Hi. My question is this. Given human polymorphisms, is it expected, I guess, that clinical trials, especially phase 3, would even pick up the large variability in the population where you would get perhaps a subset of people who would adversely react to the drug?
And while you try to answer that question, Joanne, would you explain it?
Sure. People differ, you know, genetically, and you can, in fact, there's a leukemia drug where something like, I may have these numbers slightly wrong, but the proportions are about right. About 85% of kids who get this drug will be completely cured. For 10% of kids, the drug has no effect. And 5% of kids, if you keep on giving them the drug, it'll kill them. It's because the chemicals that break down these drugs in the body can differ a little bit from person to person. We did not evolve to break down drugs and make sure that they're effective in our body. We evolved in other ways, so these drugs can have different effects on different people. Now, with numbers like that, you'll see that if you test only 100 people. You will see that it works in 85%, doesn't work in 10%, kills 5%. But when you're talking about when you're talking about other drugs, that's the art of drug approval. You've got to figure out how big a sample size do you need. And the FDA tries to figure that out based on similar drugs and on similar instances. They decide, they'll tell the company, you need to test this on 1,000 people, you need to test it on 10,000 people. If you have a really rare disease, you might not even be able to find 10,000 people.
Mm-hmm. Emron, thanks for the question.
Thank you.
Bye. Joining us now in Studio 3A is Alan Goldhammer, Associate Vice President for Scientific and Regulatory Affairs for Pharma. That's the drug industry's trade group, and thanks very much for coming in today.
Well, thank you for having me, Neil.
Are some prescription drugs approved too quickly by the FDA? Should there be more tests?
We don't think that they're approved too quickly. We think that FDA spends an awful lot of time fully evaluating the benefit and risk of any prescription drug that they approve. By our calculations, based on numbers that they reported to Congress, they spend about 13 person years, that's in the aggregate, during the review of a new drug.
And is that the review period of a new drug? Is that the is that what these user fees that Joanne was telling us? Is that what they're truly used for?
Yes, that's correct. And they in fact go beyond just paying for the new drug review. The user fee program was put into place back in 1992. To solve a real public health crisis, and that was that it was taking almost 32, 33 months to review and approve a new drug. With the advent of the program, the extra resources that were provided by the fees from industry, the review times have come down to about 13 months. When the law was renewed 2 years ago, we put into place extra funding for the Office of Drug Safety that Joanne mentioned. Mm-hmm. I think we're going to be contributing $75 million over a five-year program to that office and provide for the hiring of 106 new safety officers, that is MDs who are skilled in this science.
Should there maybe be two scales? I mean, you could see the urgency for AIDS drugs, people are dying here. Vioxx, we got the call from the gentleman. It really helped his back pain, but eventually, obviously, there were other things available that might have also helped his back pain. It's not a life or death situation necessarily. Mm. Should there be two different scales? Because obviously, not enough was done on Vioxx.
Well, there are different scales. You can't say whether it should be 2, 5, 10, or 20. Every drug is going to be different. Every drug is going to pose its own unique safety and efficacy issues. To cite one example, in the area of vaccines, the Food and Drug Administration routinely requires very large clinical trials because they want to know all of the safety issues associated with a vaccine. Vaccines are given to healthy individuals, and we certainly wouldn't want to see our children injured by a vaccine that was not studied fully. So it's not uncommon for vaccine trials to include 60 to 100,000 patients.
Let's get another caller on the line. David is with us from Kent, Ohio.
Hi, how are you today?
Very well, thank you.
I want to say, first of all, I'm a doctor of veterinary medicine, and I have been involved in research doing preclinical studies in some various settings. And the first comment I had was that I think that the FDA inspectors that I've dealt with have all handled their responsibilities with the utmost integrity and take their regulatory role very seriously. At least at the level I've seen, I think the FDA handles itself admirably. I will say that I think one of the issues that has come to light in various settings I've worked in has been that negative data towards drugs during the development process, especially in the preclinical stage, which is more what I've been involved with, obviously, in testing drugs on animals, is that negative data is often buried and hidden. And I think that that's an issue that the FDA, one, is problematic to address, but needs to be addressed nonetheless. And I'll take my comment off the air. Thank you.
Thanks for the call, David. Alan Goldhammer?
Well, data is it's not hidden in the sense that nobody ever sees it. It always has to be submitted to the FDA in the form of a license application. Pharma was very proactive in addressing this. We did set up a database that went live in early October to make available the unpublished clinical studies, as was commented on earlier about the SSRI antidepressants. Mm-hmm. This is going to be a resource that we hope our companies are taking advantage of to let that data see the light of day.
I just wanted to get a quick reaction from Joanne Silberner. Is data suppressed?
Well, it's not given out. The FDA cannot give. The FDA does receive the data from the drug companies, but the FDA can't turn around and release that data because of proprietary safety issues for the drug companies.
Okay, Mr. Goldhammer, I wanted to thank you so much for coming in today.
Thank you.
Alan Goldhammer is Associate Vice President for Scientific and Regulatory Affairs for Pharma, the drug industry's trade group. He was with us here in Studio 3A. We'll be hearing from another FDA critic and from somebody from the FDA themselves after we come back from a short break. This is NPR News. This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. We're talking today about the safety of prescription drugs and the FDA, whose role it is to make sure that those drugs are safe. Our guest is NPR science correspondent Joanne Silberner. Of course, you're invited to join the conversation. Our number is 800-989-8255, 800-989-TALK. Our email address is totn@npr.org. Let's get another caller on the line. Joey is with us from Cleveland, Ohio.
Thanks for taking my call, Neil. I appreciate your program.
Sure.
Excuse me. The first question would be for Joanne, in the period of time it used to take a drug to get approval by the FDA, and compared to the present period of time, have corners been cut, or was this time that the FDA kept research and science sort of took their time at it? And I do have a comment as well.
Okay, well, hang on with the comment, Joanne.
Boy, it's an excellent question, and I'm not sure I can answer it. You know, have corners been cut? I guess what you'd have to do is look at drug approvals recently and then subsequent drug recalls versus before this user fee system went into effect. And I don't know how that would pan out, and I also don't know whether it's a valid comparison because the FDA may have become more or less reluctant to recall now, you know, with the quicker process. So I'm sorry, but I can't answer that one.
Okay. Joey, that's what we've got for you.
Yeah, the comment I had was that while I don't think corners should be cut in terms of safety, I do feel strongly that the public has to make a decision as to whether or not they want the newest technology in the form of pharmaceuticals to advance medical care. Because if they do, they have, I believe, have to accept that there are going to be certain risks associated with having those drugs come to market.
You know, I think that that's the way that Congress sees it, or some of the investigative committees of Congress see it, is that, yes, there are those risks, but do we know about them? Do doctors know about them? Do patients know about them, you know, when they make their decisions? I think that's what the interest is in right now on Capitol Hill.
Well, this comment is based on the fact that when you have plaintiff's attorneys lining up to get clients, putting out national advertising to obtain clients in order to sue pharmaceutical companies, it sort of puts a whole travesty on the notion that science is there to advance the care of our citizens.
Well, in the case of certain companies and certain drugs, some people argue that the science isn't there to advance the goodwill of the people; it's to advance profits for the drug company.
Well, I don't think the physicians are lined up in that corner, but you know what I'm saying is, the public has to decide whether or not they want to advance medicine. And if they do, there's going to be risks. There's risks in everything.
Okay. Right, but the question is, do they understand the risks? And that's what I think people are trying to figure out right now. Do people have the information? Is it accessible to them? You know, for example, the data that the FDA can't give out that it's privy to. And do people really know about that? And can they make their own decisions with enough knowledge?
Joey, thanks very much for the call.
Thank you.
Dr. Arnold Relman joins us now by phone from his home in Boston. He's Professor Emeritus of Medicine and Social Medicine at Harvard's Medical School and also former Editor-in-Chief of the New England Journal of Medicine, and it's very good of you to be with us today.
Thank you. I'm glad to be here.
Let me ask you the same question I asked Mr. Goldhammer. Does the FDA approve drugs too quickly?
Sometimes it does, but let me quickly say this. The FDA is not its own master. The FDA does what Congress and the administration want it to do, and let it also be recognized that the industry itself exerts a powerful influence on what the administration wants the FDA to do. And those user fees, for example, are an example of an extraordinary conflict of interest. I can't understand why the public would be happy if they understood that half or more of the cost of evaluating drugs by the FDA is paid for by the industry, and the industry expects something in return. That's not the way to regulate an industry in the patient's best interests.
What's the alternative? To spend more of the public money doing that?
Absolutely. I can't think of anything more important than to have a well-funded, well-run FDA that protects our health and safety. What can be more important?
Well,
it wouldn't cost that much compared to the billions and billions of dollars that the government spends on other things. A little bit more on the spending on the FDA is a drop in the bucket. And the public ought to demand it and expect it. I don't think the industry has any business whatsoever to subsidize the agency that is supposed to be regulating it.
And let me ask you then again, if there would be additional public money or wherever, however the money is allocated, should that money be allocated in the testing before approval, or should it be should a greater proportion going into to test what happens to drugs after they get on the market?
Both. The FDA could be a lot more effective in preventing ineffective or dangerous drugs from getting on the market, and also could be more effective in recognizing very quickly that something is wrong that wasn't recognized before approval by follow-up studies. But it's deficient in both those regards, not because they don't try hard and not because there aren't good, honest, well-meaning scientists who are working for the FDA, but because they're overwhelmed by the demands for speed and approval. The number of drugs, the percentage of drugs being approved now, much higher than before. And the speed with which they're being approved is risky.
And the speed it's in and of itself, you think, is a risk factor?
I'm sorry, what is?
The speed of approval, you think, is in and of itself a risk factor?
Yes, it certainly is. Everything else being equal. Obviously, it depends on the resources you have to put on the job, and it depends on the particular drug and what the issues are. But for the average drug, rushing through approval is dangerous.
And let me ask you a question. Another part of the FDA's responsibility is, of course, that television advertising, which creates a market for the drugs.
Yes, I think that direct-to-consumer advertising is a very bad thing. No other advanced country allows that, only the United States. And that's because the industry and its marketing imperative dominates our health care policy.
That's obviously one important way that the FDA and the pharmaceutical industry have changed over the past 25, 30 years. Are there others?
Yes. The industry has overreached itself in all sorts of ways. I guess I'm an old-fashioned doctor. I've been teaching and practicing and researching and writing and editing all about medicine for more than half a century. And I've seen us evolve from a society in which the pharmaceutical industry was like the medical profession originally, dedicated to turning out safe, effective drugs driven by the scientific evidence. And profits, which of course were necessary, were not the name of the game. They felt that profits would come if they did their job well. Now, what we have is an industry that is driven by profit and by its imperative to gain market share and to satisfy its investors. And that's very dangerous.
Dr. Relman, thanks very much for being with us today. Dr. Arnold Relman joined us by phone from his office in Boston, his home in Boston, rather. He's Professor Emeritus of Medicine and Social Medicine at Harvard Medical School and a former editor-in-chief of the New England Journal of Medicine, and we appreciate very much his time today. Well, listening in is Dr. Stephen Galson, Acting Director of the Center for Drug Evaluation and Research at the Food and Drug Administration, and he's with us now by phone from his office in Rockville, Maryland, and thank you very much for being with us today.
Thank you. Good afternoon.
And, there's a lot there to chew on. Is the FDA overwhelmed, for one thing?
Absolutely not. One of the benefits of the user fees that we've received over the last few years is that we've been able to hire hundreds of more scientific reviewers. Yes, there's pressure on us to move quickly on these applications, but the pressure doesn't come from the user fees. The pressure comes from the feeling of our scientists that we're involved in a very, very important endeavor for the public health of the nation, and when there are new products that aren't being made available to the public because they're on our desks getting reviewed, people feel pressure. But this notion that user fees make us do different actions than we would without them, there's just no basis in fact.
So you reject Dr. Relman's argument that this is inherently a conflict of interest?
Absolutely.
We just heard news yesterday of a new experimental pill, Acomplia, which promises to help people lose weight and stop smoking. There is bound, if this clinical trials apparently went well, but there's bound to be enormous demand for such a pill. Obesity is a major public health problem. How does the FDA weigh the costs and benefits of bringing such a drug to market? And obviously its manufacturers are looking to their bottom lines, and they'd prefer it be sooner rather than later.
Sure. Well, as you know, this drug is coming to us for review, under review, and so I can't comment specifically about that drug, but I can tell you in general what we look at is the benefits of the drug, and then we, based on the information we have, and the important fact to understand here is that before approval, we don't have all the information that would be necessary to understand the magnitude of all risks that are going to be seen after approval. We look at that data and we weigh the benefits against the risks. The cost issues that you've mentioned briefly don't come into play with the FDA's analysis of new drug applications. We make a risk benefit decision based on the data that comes to us in the clinical trials.
Is the FDA underfunded, as we heard from Dr. Relman?
We always say that if we had more, we can do more, but we feel like we're resourced at a good level to fulfill our mission and to move on applications in an expeditious way.
All right, let's get some listeners involved in the conversation. 800-989-8255, 800-989-TALK. Email is totn@npr.org, and Colin is with us from Santa Rosa, California.
How's it going? Thanks for having me on.
All right.
A little bit hard with words. I was wondering if somebody there could answer, could talk to a question of approval, but not really about the drugs. I was wondering about how they go about their hiring process and what they look for in the history of the person that's going to try to be an officer or whatever you call it of the FDA. I've heard several instances of corporations having former FDA agents in the corporations and vice versa, mm-hmm. Sending people from the corporations into the FDA, and that goes beyond the. I don't know. I was just wondering about that.
So you're concerned about the what's known as the corporate revolving door as people go in and out of industry and corporation and government.
Yeah, that's right.
Okay, Dr. Galson.
Sure, I'd be happy to address that. Our major problem is that once medical officers, once scientists of all stripes spend a few years at the FDA, they become precious commodities that the drug industry would be very interested in recruiting. So we have a real challenge of keeping a high-level qualified staff. If there is someone from industry who decides that they want to come to FDA, of course that wouldn't rule them out as a candidate. What we really look at is the skills and the experience, the scientific knowledge, the aptitude of that person to work in a government organization on the kinds of missions that we have.
Okay. Right on. Colin, thanks very much.
Thank you so much.
We're talking about the Food and Drug Administration, about drug safety, drug availability. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. In the studio with me is NPR's Joanne Silberna. On the line with us is Dr. Stephen Galson, Acting Director of the Center for Drug Evaluation and Research at the Food and Drug Administration. And let's get another caller on the line. Brooke joins us from Louisville, Kentucky.
Hello?
Hi, you're on the air, Brooke.
Oh, hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Uh-huh.
My question is about the role of politics and the FDA. The fact that they recently refused to approve the morning after drug, and it was widely reported that politics played a huge role in that. And I'll take my answer off the air.
Okay, thanks. Brooke, thank you for calling. Dr. Galson?
Sure, I'm happy to address that. I know there's been a lot of concern about that issue. The bottom line is that politics don't play a role in drug approval decisions. These are public health, science-based decisions. There are no political appointees in the Center for Drug Evaluation and Research. We're all career scientists, and political considerations just are not applied to drug approval decisions.
Joanne Silberner.
Well, I think one of the reasons that question comes up, though, in this case, is that the advisory committees, I think there were two together, voted 24-3 in favor of moving that drug over the counter. So there was, and I think in any story you read or hear about FDA, we always say, and the FDA usually follows the recommendations of its advisory committee. So when it didn't, I think it raised some eyebrows.
Sure, and I understand that it raised eyebrows. The important thing to realize with this particular case is that we didn't ask the advisory committees in specific about the issue that resulted in us not approving that application. We probably should have, but we didn't, and that's why there was an issue that came up in the end part of the review that we hadn't thought about in a great detail before, and so we we just didn't have information from the advisory committee about that particular aspect, which was the impact of over-the-counter availability on our youngest women who might take the medication.
Let's get another caller on the line. Tom is with us from Cleveland.
Hi. You know, your pharmacy, the pharmaceutical industry spokes model that you have as a guest today will probably disagree with me, but here are some facts about the politics of pharmaceutical drugs in America today. Fact is, the majority of the drugs that people want to import from Canada and Europe are manufactured by American-based manufacturers. They're manufactured either here in the United States or in their foreign plants. They are of the exact same quality that is available in the United States. And the reason that the president said right in the debates that, oh, well, we're very concerned about safety, is he's simply concerned about protecting pharmaceutical company profits. That's the fact. You know, all you got to do is look at the new pharmaceutical plan for seniors and the fact that, gee, the government and the pharmaceutical companies, for some reason, both agree that we shouldn't be able to negotiate better prices. Well, why is that? It's obvious. I mean, you know, having a guest on that says, oh, you know, there's no influence in the industry for politics and everything is ridiculous, and I don't think anybody believes it.
Well,
it's obvious. These are huge contributors. They contribute, the chemical companies and their pharmaceutical subsidiaries.
And, Tom, I think we get the point. Let's get a response from Dr. Galson.
Well, I'm not quite sure what the question was there, so let me.
I think the question was about a perception that, for example, the drug reimportation from Canada is driven by concern over industry profits, and that indeed that drives a lot of concerns at the FDA.
Right. Well, what I was addressing before is specific drug approval decisions, and you know, there's no question that politics don't play a role in whether or not we decide to approve a drug. Importation is obviously a very, very complex issue that does involve politics. It does involve the health of the industry. It involves how we're going to fund research and development for pharmaceutical products, and it's not a panacea to say that the answer to all these questions is to import drugs from Canada. When you go on the internet and you order a drug from a company that may have Canada in the name of the website, you don't know if that drug is coming from Canada or whether it's coming from South Africa or the Congo or anywhere else. And there are important safety issues related to drug importation. You can't deny that. That's
Dr. Galson, I'm afraid we're out of time, but thank you very much for being with us today. Stephen Galson, Acting Director of the Center for Drug Evaluation and Research at the FDA. After a short break, the sixth of our seven deadly sins, anger. It's Talk of the Nation.